term OFW or Overseas Filipino Worker might have been coined during the 1990s, but Filipinos have been hunting for greener pastures in faraway lands for centuries now. During the age of sail, the world called them Manila men. When galleons shuttled back and forth between Acapulco and Manila, India sometimes made up two-thirds of the ship's crews. They didn't all come back home and instead found new homes and new work. Over the centuries, Manila men worked as whalers in Massachusetts, fur trappers in Alaska, fishermen in Louisiana and South Africa, soldiers for hire in Shanghai, or as pearl farmers in Australia. As steam killed sail and shrank the world, the Manila men evolved with the times. In the 1900s, plantation owners and industrialists in the United States began hiring large numbers of Filipinas. Because the Philippines was already an American colony, it was fairly easy for these migrants to enter the country. They walked off the gangplanks of steamships and into hard labor among the fields and the fruit trees. When the air chilled into strange and unfamiliar winter, they found work in the cities as gardeners, dishwashers, and domestic helpers. The bad pay and back-breaking work did not deter more Filipinos from making their way into the States. By 1930, there were more than 45,000 Filipinos in the mainland United States. Even in the 20th century, that old Manila Man moniker still held true. 9 in 10 of the migrant workers were male. At night, they hung out in dance halls and gambling dens, then danced with the locals. Some of these women were just friendly, but others came with a price, with the Filipinos paying 10 cents a minute to bust out the Lindy Hop or the Jitterbug with their partners. It was inevitable that inside these crowded and rowdy hangouts, romance would blossom. It would sometimes lead to wedding bells, the brown-skinned hired hand from the Philippines getting down on one knee to ask for the all-American girl's hand in marriage. But many couples did not expect that one thing that would pull them away from their happy ending, the pasty white grasp of the law. Welcome to the Colonial Department. This is the podcast where we take long-lost stories from Philippine colonial history and bring them to life. In this episode, we take a look at how American laws threatened to put a stop to marriages between Filipinos and whites. This is Season 5, Episode 12, Who Can Mr. Filipino Marry? Any legislation that governs what skin color your husband or your wife could have is called an anti-miscegenation law. You may ask, what's the point of putting a stop to mixed marriages? Black historian Isabel Wilkerson offers a simple explanation. In her award-winning book, Caste, The Origin of Our Discontents, she identifies the control of marriage and mating as one of the 8 pillars that prop up a caste system.
Endogamy is an ironclad foundation of any caste society, from ancient India to the early American colonies to the Nazi regime in Germany.
She writes,
it builds a firewall between castes and becomes the primary means of keeping resources and affinity within each tier of the caste system. Endogamy, by closing off legal family connections, blocks the chance for empathy or a sense of shared destiny between the castes.
Now, it's perfectly reasonable for you to want up to end up with someone who looks like you, acts like you, with the same background and the same privileges as you. But for the law of the land to erect a great racial wall on the wedding aisle is to invite institutionalized alienation, prejudice, and racism. One day, you might hear your uptight aunt sniffing about how the people on the other side of town aren't your kind of people. And the next, you're saturated with poisonous rhetoric about preserving the purity of the bloodline. Americans learned early on in their history to never cross that oldest and most enduring barrier, the divide between black and white. Marriage between the two was an impossibility, and black men getting into relationships with white women would be fined or imprisoned. The law also looked the other way when angry mobs of whites murdered black men who dared make a move on a white woman. East Asian immigrants began entering the West Coast en masse from the 1850s onwards. In California, polite and impolite society went into hysterics at the thought of Chinese or Japanese men getting white girls pregnant. One state delegate said that the child of any union between a Chinese and an American would be, and I'm not kidding, this is a direct quote,
"a hybrid of the most despicable, a mongrel of the most detestable that has ever walked the earth."
Rumors began going around that Asians were filthy, diseased, and out to sexually assault white women. By 1905, the California state legislature had outlawed all marriages between white spouses and members of the so-called Mongolian race. It was in this tense atmosphere that Filipino scholars and workers began to arrive on the West Coast. But there was something different about this new wave of migrants. Because America had colonized the Philippines in 1898, residents of the Philippines had a unique status as U.S. nationals. And because they were ruled by Americans and had been ruled by Spain prior for 333 years, they felt a little bit more at home inside the Western culture compared to, say, the Chinese or Japanese migrants. So the Filipino men who stepped into the States turned out to be an outgoing lot. They were young, they were single, and often there wasn't a single Filipina around. They spent their small salaries on good suits and patent leather shoes, and as one California judge disapprovingly put it, strut around town like peacocks. Undeterred by the many signs that said, "Filipinos or dogs not allowed," the Filipinos hung around in dance halls and worked their charm on the white and Latina ladies who were also regulars. And despite the discrimination and the hostility, some of these couples eventually decided to get hitched. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Leo, creator, host, and writer of this podcast. Sorry to interrupt your listening, but apparently my hosting platform tells me that this is the 102nd episode of the Colonial Department. That's amazing. I didn't even realize, and I let the 100th episode go by without any fanfare. Well, better late than never. I'd like to thank everyone who's ever tuned in. That means you. Your support really means a lot to this podcast. Hope you can keep listening, and if you can, subscribe to and share the pod. As some of you know, the book version of this podcast will also be released in May 2024. It will be called Silk, Silver, Spices, Slaves: Lost Tales from the Philippine Colonial Period, and it will be published by Faction Press, a Singaporean publisher. Stay tuned to this podcast for more details or follow us at The Colonial Dept, that's DEPT, on Instagram and TikTok. Now, back to some more Philippine history. Still in California, the law didn't seriously challenge the right of Filipinos to intermarry until the 1920s. But when they tried to break up marriages in front of the court, judges and lawmakers ran into a curious legal problem of their own creation. Basically, the question they had to answer was, were Filipinos part of the Mongolian race or were they something else? In 1775, just before the Declaration of American Independence, German naturalist Johann Friedrich Blumenbach divided the people of the earth into five so-called races: Caucasian or white, Mongolian or yellow, Malayan or brown, Ethiopian or black, and American or red. This was a simplistic division of humanity's wide spectrum of skin colors that over the years was often invoked to justify Caucasian superiority. In California, as we discussed, lawmakers were so preoccupied with protecting the purity of white women against the Chinese or Japanese that they banned all marriages between whites and Mongolians. But the law said nothing about Filipinos, and so jurors twisted themselves into legal pretzels just to prove that Filipinos were Mongolians. Take this case from 1925 with murder and marriage mixed in one explosive cocktail. Timothy Yatko was a Filipino waiter who wed Lola Butler, a white woman he'd met in a San Diego dance hall and who later left him after they got hitched. When Timothy spied Lola kissing her new beau, rage overtook the man and he stabbed Lola's boyfriend to death. Now, the state of California wanted Lola to testify against Timothy in court. But because they were married, spousal privilege meant that Butler could not take the witness stand against Yatko. And so the court got to work dismantling Timothy and Lola's union. To do that, they turned to that decades-old anti-miscegenation law that declared all white marriages to Mongolians null and void. To prove that Yatko was in fact Mongolian, the prosecution trotted out encyclopedias, ethnologists, and existing federal decisions on naturalization cases. Their main point was clear: any mixing between the races was evil. Look what happened to Mexico, the counsel for the state snidely pointed out. The judge agreed, saying in his decision,
"I am quite satisfied in my own mind that the Filipino is a Malay, and the Malay is a Mongolian, just as much as the white American is of the Teutonic race, the Teutonic family, or of the Nordic family, carrying it back to the Aryan family. Hence, it is my view that under the Code of California as it now exists, intermarriage between a Filipino and a Caucasian would be void."
Timothy and Lola's marriage was annulled, and Butler took the stand against her now ex-husband. Eventually, Yatko was convicted and sentenced to life imprisonment in San Quentin. You've just seen how an anti-miscegenation law came into play in a very extraordinary criminal case. Over the next couple of years, Filipinos faced civil proceedings over their marriages, and California courts had to argue over and over again about which race we belong. In three cases, judges ruled in favor of the marriage, deciding that Filipinos were not Mongolian. That all came to an end in 1933, when the governor of California signed Resolutions 175 and 176 into law. These legislations definitively prohibited all marriages between whites and Malays. Whether a Filipino was a Mongolian or a Malay, it didn't matter now. We would be barred from marrying whites either way. Worse still, the new amendments were retroactive, meaning that all marriage licenses issued even before these laws were passed would be null and void. With one single stroke of his pen, the governor ended all unions between Filipinos and whites. There was no question that he'd signed amendments into state law. The governor was a member of the Native Sons and Daughters of the Golden West, an anti-immigrant group that wanted to turn California into a quote-unquote white man's paradise. All in all, Arizona, California, Maryland, Virginia, South Dakota, Utah, Georgia, Nevada, and Wyoming signed legislation that specifically prohibited marriages between whites and Malays. 39 U.S. states in total would pass anti-miscegenation laws that persisted well into the 20th century. But in at least one corner of America, the Filipino community united with Black, Japanese, church, and labor groups to rally for their right to marry whomever they wanted. In the state of Washington, as a Filipino man and a white woman applied for a marriage license, a bill was introduced in 1935 that would prohibit any union between whites and, quote-unquote, Negroes, Orientals, Malays, and persons of Eastern European extraction. The opposition jumped to action. Spanning skin colors and political ideologies, this coalition wrote letters and published editorials protesting against the bill. As one article written by a Filipino argued at the time, a law against intermarriage was a law that stood against everything the United States represented. Their collective action worked. The bill was tabled by a committee and never went to a vote. A small, meaningful victory that we should all remember, even as fights over who we can or cannot marry persist to this day. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Colonial Department. Find us on Instagram and TikTok for more history, behind the scenes, and non-fiction book recommendations. If you want to know more about a different kind of OFW, listen to Season 1, Episode 2, Manila Men Mercs in Shanghai. Leo Mangubat wrote, narrated, and produced this episode. Anya Ong Reyes read quotations from sources. References include 1. articles by Corinne Strandyard, Richard Baldoz, Letty Volk, and Stephanie Johnson about U.S. anti-miscegenation laws that targeted Filipinos. 2. Filomeno Aguilar's paper on the history of Manila men. 3. Isabel Wilkerson's book on the foundations of racism called Caste, The Origin of Our Discontents.